Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Workers at Nabisco, that's the company that makes Oreos and Ritz crackers, walk out at several U.S. locations. Why? They're striking to keep what they already have. And today on the show, the legacy of Richard Trumka and why we need to supply America, the Steelworkers Bus Tour. Welcome to the Thursday, August 19th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. John Nichols is going to be our first guest on the show, no stranger to America's Workforce. He's the national affairs correspondent for The Nation magazine, thenation.com. This is a segment we started with that publication some years ago, a publication that's been around since the days of the Civil War. And John did an incredibly good article on the late, great Richard Trumka. It's titled Richard Trumka, 1949 to 2021. The labor leader practiced true solidarity, says John, from his days as an anti-apartheid activist to his bold embrace of immigrant rights and Black Lives Matter. And he starts his article talking about Rich's involvement with miners in South Africa. Well, he comes from the coal mines. I mean, he was 33 when he became president of the Mine Workers Union, the youngest president ever. So he was very near and dear to them. And at the time, we're going back to the 80s, Rich called for a boycott of Royal Dutch Shell. Huge company, multinational, that invested heavily in mining and other South African industries. And then he goes through his entire life, how he rose up the ranks of the AFL-CIO. And fast forward to 2008. And later in the show, we're going to play a clip of Rich, because John references how Rich had to face labor leaders in 2008 and tell them it's okay to vote for a Black guy for president. Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of pushback. I mean, you know the problems with race in America. And Rich confronted that head on. And he was proven right. He was proven right. It's a great, great article. And I'm so looking forward to John Nichols to talk about Rich Trumka, who died of a massive heart attack 2 weeks ago today. I want to call your attention to, while we're talking about Rich, if you go to the AFL-CIO website, and I hit this pretty hard last week and the week before, AFLCIO.org, there's a really good piece there posted by Bren Riley. Bren's the president of the Alabama AFL-CIO, and he points out that the world will always remember Rich for his lifelong dedication to working people, for his unparalleled leadership, and for being the voice of the 21st century labor movement. But for the mine workers who ache for his passing, they will remember him as one of their own, who came home one last time to bring them together and push them forward. And he's talking about the day before he died, he was on a family vacation. Rich left his family to go on the picket line at Warrior Met, where the miners have been striking since April 1. Yeah, just check that out. Also on that page, you will find a place to donate in Rich's memory. And it's the Penn State Scholarship Fund. The memo line is Trumka Family Trustee Scholarship. And you can mail your donations in. And again, that's all posted at AFLCIO.org. Second guest on the show today is Tiffany McKee. And Tiffany is from District 1, which is the entire state of Ohio, for the United Steelworkers, USW.org. If you go to that website, you can follow what the Steelworkers started this week. And that is the We Supply America Tour. This is very well timed, because just last week, the Senate passed that $1.2 trillion infrastructure investment package to build or repair our roads, bridges, public transit, water systems, electric grid, broadband, electric vehicle charging stations. I mean, we've been talking about all this on the show. The important thing is, if we're going to do all this, let's make it made in America. Now, Buy American provisions were included in that bill. And our labor secretary, Marty Walsh, said that the president has made this a priority, making made in America a priority, pointing to the president's executive order signed during his first week in office to strengthen Buy America. And Marty was on the bus on Monday when they kicked off that tour. Well, the coordinator of that tour is Tiffany McKee. And again, she's from District 1, and she's going to tell us all about it, how it's been effective so far, where they're going with this. It's my understanding, I think it's going to wrap up in Pittsburgh tomorrow, which is where the steelworkers are headquartered. So Tiffany McKee will be buttoning up the show as our second guest. Hundreds of workers who make and deliver Oreo cookies and Ritz crackers have gone on strike in a massive showdown with their parent company, Mondelez. The work stoppage and 24-hour picket lines began at a production facility in Portland, Oregon. This was last week, and that has now spread to a distribution hub in Aurora, Colorado, and another production facility in Richmond, Virginia. The workers are all members of the Bakery, Confectionery, Tobacco Workers, and Grain Millers International Union, which has not been able to reach an agreement with Mondelez on new contracts. Workers and the union reps say the strike follows years of frustration with Mondelez, which was created back in 2012 when Nabisco and Nabisco products were spun off from Kraft Foods. Mondelez is demanding changes to pay and health care coverage that would undermine what have long been solid middle class production and trucking jobs, they say. Cameron Taylor is a business agent with the Baker's Local 364. He put it bluntly, we're not on strike to secure huge gains. We're on strike to keep what we already have. That's right. Mr. Taylor said Mondelez wants to ditch the premium pay system that's long been in place, and it guarantees time and a half pay for working more than 8 hours a day, time and a half pay on Saturdays, and double time for working on Sundays. Well, instead, the workers would be paid straight time until they hit a full 40 hours, regardless of what days they work or how long those days last. Ooh, is that sneaky? Now, the company spokesperson, Lori Guzzanotti, said the company has proposed an alternative work schedule for some employees who would work 12-hour shifts 3 or 4 days a week. The schedule would offer a 3-day weekend every other week, she said, while helping the company meet production on its most demand products. However, there's a problem. Workers said such a plan would take thousands of dollars out of their pockets every year. Mike Burlingham, who's been at the Portland site for 14 years now and works in pest control, said the proposal would encourage imposing longer shifts on workers because they would be cheaper for the company, even though the schedule can already be a grind. This is what he said. Mike is 39. My longest stretch without a single day off was 5 weeks, and it's worse for other people. Their whole thing is to remove paying out premiums. Now, Burlingham said top pay at his facility is $29 per hour, while the new hires, they're closer to $20. He estimates that some workers, some of them, could lose $10,000 a year if those premiums were removed. Keith Bragg, president of the Baker's Local 358, now they're in Richmond, Virginia, Keith said the workers at his plant agree. He worked for 45 years at the facility. If the company secures this new pay structure on its contracts, Bragg said, we wouldn't be one of those places where people want to come and make a career out of it. The money, the benefits, these are things we fought for over the years. In addition to changing premiums, the company's proposal would also put new hires on a less generous health plan while maintaining the status quo for existing employees, union reps, and so on. Such two-tier benefit systems can cause some division. Boy, we know that. Remember the auto workers dealt with that some years back. Well, Mondelez said the statement that it was disappointed to see three locations go on strike. And this is a quote, our goal has been and continues to be to bargain in good faith with the union leadership across our U.S. bakeries and sales distribution facilities to reach new contracts that continue to provide our employees with good wages and competitive benefits. So right now, the strike is on at various locations. And just a little background on Mondelez. I remember talking to the Bakers Union some years back when they moved 600 jobs out of the city of Chicago into Mexico. And they called for consumers to look at the packages of Oreos and Ritz crackers and make sure that you buy the ones that are produced in New Jersey and not the ones in Monterrey, Mexico. And the CEO of that company, I last recall she made about $160 million a year. All right, with that being said, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, John Nichols of The Nation Magazine.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without iron workers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained iron workers and 20,000 apprentices, the Iron Workers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Iron Workers, the sky's the limit.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number one and welcome almost a regular on this show. Each and every month, we check in with The Nation Magazine. And joining us on our live line is John Nichols, who's been on the show many, many times. And John wrote a really good piece on Rich Trumka, the passing of Rich Trumka at the age of 72, shocked so many in the labor movement, including John. Hey, John, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
It's an honor to be with you, my friend, and a real pleasure to be able to talk about Rich Trumka, one of the really good guys in our long struggle for labor rights.
Boy, I tell you, really good guy, intelligent, hard worker. I mean, he started early in the morning and worked till the wee hours of the night. He was all about growing the membership, organizing, the connections he made politically. I want to get into all of that. And let's go to the beginning here, because that's what you reference in your article on when he was with the mine workers union and what he did with the mine workers. I mean, he was what was he like 33 or something like that when he took over as president of the mine workers?
That's right. You know, the thing about Rich Trumka, the thing to remember is that he was a worker first. He went down into the mines as a very young man, worked the black seam, as they say. And this was in southwest Pennsylvania. And while he was mining, and while he was working as his father and grandfather had, he also was pursuing an education. He got a college degree and then went on to get a law degree. Came up out of the mines and became a lawyer for the United Mine Workers Union. If you remember, with the mine workers back in the 70s, that was an incredibly turbulent time. They had, you know, real brutal battles over the leadership of that union. They were violent. There were charges of corruption. And Rich Trumka led, or became very much a leader in, a movement of reformers who sought to move the union to a better place. And at the age of 33, he got elected as the head of the mine workers union. The other thing to remember is that he came up at a time when Reagan was breaking the air traffic controllers, when unions were under a lot of assault at home, and it would have been quite predictable for him just to simply focus on the basic struggles that miners were involved in the U.S. But he had this much better view, and I think it's one of the things that really established him as a major labor leader. He very quickly after coming in opened up a office of solidarity with black mine workers in South Africa, who were obviously suffering under the apartheid system at that time. And when those mine workers in South Africa asked for a boycott of Royal Dutch Shell, the company that had so many investments in South Africa and was really shoring up the apartheid regime, Trumka didn't just endorse that boycott. He became the leader of it in the United States. And many, many activists across the country came to know Rich Trumka first as an anti-apartheid activist, as somebody fighting for racial justice. And that really was a central part of his message and his work throughout his career. He was first and foremost a leader of American workers, but he had a view that was very international and that was also very much committed to social and racial justice.
Yeah, he had pretty much a worldview because, and you have to keep in mind, too, that's when the trade laws that we were negotiating back then, that's when things started happening. And obviously that led up to NAFTA, and we saw a lot of jobs disappear to other countries. But and Rich got into that as well. We can touch on that at a later time. But he was always ahead of the issues. That's the thing that made him so special. Talk to me about what was this bitter strike? It was Pittston Coal, and that was, I believe, in the late 80s. Was that when that happened, or the early 90s?
The late 80s, and kind of some of the struggles stretched on for quite a while. But Pittston was a remarkable, remarkable struggle. It was down in southwest Virginia, and part of the country where, frankly, not a lot of media attention tends to go. And the labor movement itself was, again, as we've talked about, you know, under attack in a lot of places. And when the miners struck there, and this is for health care benefits and for a lot of other protections, they weren't getting attention. They weren't getting, you know, the support they needed. And so Trumka decided to go big on this struggle. And he turned their strike into something much more than just a strike, much more than just a picket line. They created an encampment. People came from all over the country to, you know, basically moved into southwest Virginia and support those miners. And they created women's solidarity groups. They created student solidarity groups. They built it into something really big. that anticipated the Occupy Wall Street movement. In fact, in many ways, many of the same models and same structures for organizing decades before Occupy Wall Street. And the remarkable thing is that in that Pittston struggle with all of these new techniques for organizing, for building out models, for fighting a big corporation, they won. The miners mm-hmm. prevailed. And they didn't get everything they asked for. They, you know, it's very hard to do that. But they got their critical demands met. And it was just a remarkable strike, one that's very worthy of remembering.
Well, he had the miners in his heart and soul. I don't know if you know this, but the day before he died, he rallied the striking miners at Warrior Met. I don't know if you've been following that story. They're
yep,
down in
I
Alabama. They've been on strike since the beginning of April. And there was a rally, and they had brothers and sisters all around the country. I know there was a group from Pennsylvania. I had the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO on the show, and they were getting a bunch of their miners together to go down there. That was the day right before he died, and he went on the picket line and supported them.
Oh, yeah.
And said, and he was on, and he's in the middle of his family vacation. I mean, that just shows you what kind of dedicated guy that he was. You know, you describe him in your article, John, as an old school labor activist who was willing to fight for the movement. And I just want to talk about that a little bit more in contrast to the guy that preceded him, John Sweeney. Different kind of style there. I don't know if you followed John Sweeney. I know he came from the Service Employees International. Now, how would you compare and contrast them? Because, you know, labor's been going through some tumultuous times. You brought up Reagan, which pretty much opened the door on corporate America to say, screw you, labor. We're going to come after you. We're going to bust your unions. But how do you compare and contrast the two?
Well, I think that the first thing to remember is that John Sweeney and Rich Trumka came out of the same place overall within the labor movement. There had been a real concern in much of the 70s into the 80s that the labor movement was becoming too bureaucratic, that it was not as engaged with organizing and movement politics as it needed to be. And both Sweeney and Trumka believed that. They were part of a push to transform the movement. Now, Sweeney was, you know, obviously with service employees and rooted in a lot of their traditions, very much an organizing and activist tradition, very much a building tradition. Coming out of more New York City, here's Trumka coming out of a much more rural setting in western Southwest Pennsylvania, with miners who tended to work in more rural areas, or at least in areas that were further from the big cities. And so, yeah, they came from different places. But here's the really significant thing, and this is what's I think the striking reality with Rich Trumka. Rich Trumka looked like a lot of the workers he represented, and he talked like a lot of the workers he represented. And that actually gave him tremendous power because, like Sweeney, he was a labor intellectual. Rich Trumka read widely, knew a great deal. I mean, he's a brilliant man. But when Trumka was out there on the picket line, especially, he had this sort of, you know, like just rough and tumble style. He would, you know, grab your hand. He would hug you. He had a deep, rough voice, which really resonated when you're at a rally or on a picket line. And so he, in some ways, looked like the embodiment of a lot of blue collar, you know, get your hands dirty workers. And yet, here he was going in there and saying, yeah, we have to be about women's rights. We have to be about civil rights. We have to be about LGBTQ rights. He kept expanding out the vision of the labor movement. And I think Sweeney believed in that as well. So I'm not going to make a distinction there. But I think that Trumka was very, very successful and in doing this, or at least very determined. And a part of that had to do with the fact that he knew a lot of the workers who might be a little resistant to some of these changes. And he went out and he spoke to them directly. He would meet with them. He would sit with them, in the union hall. He'd walk with them on the picket line. And he would say, look, this union movement has to grow beyond itself. It has to get bigger. It has to embrace immigrant rights. It has to embrace Black Lives Matter. It has to embrace gay and lesbian rights. It has to recognize that we can't be divided. We have to build something out that's united. And I think he really, he walked the walk, so to speak. And I think that was a very powerful contribution to the labor movement in the period that he was one of its leaders.
And John, to your point, he pretty much preached that in 2008 when Barack Obama was running to be the first Black president. That was an interesting time, and we have a clip of that that we're going to share with our listeners right here on America's Workforce. John Nichols joining us on our live line. This is our segment we do each and every month from The Nation magazine. John is the national affairs correspondent for The Nation magazine. The article is titled Richard Trumka, 1949 to 2021. The labor leader practiced true solidarity from his days as an anti-apartheid activist to his bold embrace of immigrant rights and Black Lives Matter. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, we're available on 5 podcasts. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. When you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We'd appreciate a 5-star rating. Slowly but surely, we're getting more 5-star ratings. So we're always trying to get better here on America's Workforce. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin John Nichols on behalf of The Nation magazine talking about Richard Trumka, the passing of Rich Trumka just a couple of weeks ago. And this stunned so many people in the labor movement. And we're just reflecting on what he did as a labor leader, starting off with the mine workers at the age of 33. We touched on that, but let's fast forward to the 2008 presidential race. He was still Secretary Treasurer of the Labor Federation at that time, and John Sweeney was still the president. And there was some animosity by a number of people, and we're talking union brothers and sisters, about whether or not a Black guy should be elected president. And you talk about that in your article, John. I'd like you to reflect on that. And I want to play a clip of Rich when he made that address in 2008. But let's start off with you. Go ahead.
Well, I think the important thing to understand is that in 2008, Barack Obama was just 4 years out of the Illinois state legislature. A lot of people in the labor movement around the country didn't know him that well. They would come to know him and in many ways be much more supportive. But in that transition point after Obama won the nomination over Hillary Clinton, who had notably had a lot of labor endorsements in that race, in the primary race, there were real concerns. A lot of Democratic strategists were worried that for a variety of reasons, the workers in especially some of the battleground states, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, might be open to an appeal from John McCain, who was certainly a well-liked war hero, person who was very well-known was the Republican nominee that year. And the concern was that if blue-collar, working-class people didn't turn out for Barack Obama, that it was possible those states could go for the Republican. And we know from, 8 years later in 2016, that several of those states did go for Donald Trump. So it wasn't an unthinking or an irrational concern. And Rich Trumka decided to take that on. He went straight into the battleground states. He went straight to some of the major unions, including the steel workers and others. And he delivered very detailed, very pointed addresses in which he recognized that the labor movement hadn't always been where it needed to be on issues of race and, frankly, on issues of solidarity. And he delivered this very powerful message that said, we can't be that this time. We can't fail this time because it is so absolutely essential after 8 years of Bush and Cheney that a Democrat win and that the Democrat who wins be Barack Obama. And so he gave these very powerful speeches, and Obama himself gave Trumka a significant amount of credit for, building out that coalition and, frankly, helping the Democrats in 2008 to win a huge victory, not just for president, but in the House and Senate races.
Well, John, we have a clip from that speech. That was at a United Steelworkers convention in July of 2008. Let's listen here on America's Workforce.
Now, I'm not one for quoting dead philosophers, but back in the 1700s, Edmund Burke said, all that is necessary for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing. Well, there is no evil that's inflicted more pain and more suffering than racism. And it's something that we in the labor movement have a very, very special responsibility to challenge. It's our special responsibility because we know better than anyone else how racism is used to divide working people. We've seen how companies set workers against worker. They throw white workers a few crumbs. They discriminate against black workers or Latino workers, and we all end up losing. But we've seen something else too. We've seen that when we have the courage, the good sense, the trade union values to cross the color line and stand together, arms locked, no one has ever been able to keep us down.
John, you could tell the passion in his voice from that speech. I mean, and that was him. That was him. He already started his campaign of inclusion well before that. That everybody, hey, we're all in this struggle together. And I think probably when you reflect back on Rich's life, and there's so much to reflect upon, that probably stands at the top, bringing everybody together, don't you think?
Well, I think he was a modernizer. And that what that meant was that he looked around and he said, look, a lot of things are changing. We're experiencing a lot of deindustrialization. We are experiencing the damage done by trade deals that make it much harder to keep our jobs here. Industries are changing. How we work is changing. And the workforce itself is changing. And what he said was, we can't be divided at this time. We could never afford to be divided. It always did damage in the past. But at a time of such transition, and at a time when labor is so under attack by corporations, by right-wing forces, it was absolutely necessary to practice this deeper solidarity. And so he bluntly said, labor has got to respect, welcome, support immigrants. And to say that we want to organize immigrant workers, labor has to respect, welcome, and organize women. Labor has to respect, welcome, and organize people of color. That you have to, you know, fully recognize that these workers, these people who have always been part of our working class, have to be fully embraced by the labor movement. And their strength, their wisdom, their determination has to be a part of the labor movement going forward. And he did it in this, he's a very strong way, a very wise way, I believe. Now, he didn't always succeed. It was very frustrating. And labor, as you well know, has been under brutal assault. But one of the fascinating things was that in the period of Trump's leadership, especially in recent years, you saw the popularity of organized labor go through the roof, right?
Yeah.
The approval ratings for unions are higher now than they've been at most times in history. And so while he didn't always succeed in every level, I think that Trump and people like him, a lot of allies, a lot of other people who've done hard work, have succeeded in helping Americans to understand more of why we need strong unions. And, you know, now, of course, the tragedy of his death is it came at a point when, with a Democratic president, Democratic House and Senate, there was the work to start to knock down the barriers to organizing. I think if we succeed in getting the PRO Act, if we succeed in knocking down so many of the barriers to organizing, we are at a renaissance point for organized labor in this country, a point where because of the popularity of unions, because of the popularity of labor, if we can just get past some of these barriers erected both by corporations and by government, we have a tremendous opportunity to see massive new levels of organizing. And when that happens, I think that Rich Trumko will get a good measure of the credit for it.
Oh, I know. They plan to have a statue outside the AFL-CIO headquarters. And as you know, he was lying pretty much in state there in the House of Labor. I mean, so many people were shocked by his passing. And I'm hoping and praying that should they get this PRO Act, and I think eventually it's going to happen. We have the right people, obviously, in the White House. Look at our labor secretary. I know we have a razor-thin majority in the Senate with Kamala Harris and all that, but it would be great to have it called the Rich Trumka PRO Act, Protect the Right to Organize Act, because he fought so much, tirelessly, for that PRO Act to happen. And we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. But what a legacy he has left us. It's great that you reflected on it, John. I appreciate you coming on the show and highlighting what this man has done for so many workers, both union and non-union. When you think about it, labor lifts all boats. We know that, don't we?
He absolutely is true. And if I can just say one final thing, it's just I really got to know Rich Trumka during the Wisconsin uprising of 2011, a decade ago. And when workers and their allies went out to protest against Scott Walker's assault on labor rights, which really was the beginning of a much broader assault, Rich Trumka showed up, he marched, he rallied, he organized, and the incredible thing about him is he kept coming back. He never, ever forgot about the struggle in Wisconsin and earned a lot of loyalty and, frankly, a lot of value. I mean, people in my state remember him as a really heroic figure.
Big shoes to fill, no doubt. John, thank you so much. John Nichols, National Affairs Correspondent for The Nation magazine, in the article Rich Trumka, 1949-2021, the labor leader practiced true solidarity from his days as an anti-apartheid activist to his bold embrace of immigrant rights and Black Lives Matter. You take care, stay safe, and I'm sure we'll be talking down the road. All right, buddy?
I would love to do it. I look forward to it, my friend.
Again, John Nichols of The Nation magazine. You can find more at thenation.com. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Tiffany McKee of Steelworkers District 1 talking about the We Supply America bus tour.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac? You may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Chris LaGrange here, host of UCOM Live with Chris LaGrange. News, talk, sports, and workforce politics. The fastest growing podcast on, in, and around the internet. Join us live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter with archives on UCOMLive.com. Our loud and colorful panelists bring you current events like no other. So follow and subscribe today wherever great podcasts are found.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit SurveyandBallotSystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And we're back. Don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle at AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two and welcome to the show Tiffany McKee. Tiffany is here on behalf of the North Coast Labor Federation segment. Normally, Pat Gallagher joins us, but he is on assignment, I believe, in Alabama. We might talk to him next month. But Tiffany is with District 1, which is in the state of Ohio, the entire state of Ohio, for the steelworkers. And this week, the steelworkers started their We Supply America bus tour. Very important. We are very close to getting an infrastructure deal. It's in the House right now. They're trying to work out details. And it's very, very important that if we're going to rebuild our roads and bridges, let's make it all made in America, and the steelworkers can supply many of those products. Tiffany McKee, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So you were telling me off the air, you grew up in Western Ohio, and you were working. I always like to ask people how they get involved in unions. And you had an experience with, what was it, a non-union place where you actually needed several jobs in order to make ends meet. Is that right?
That is correct. I've worked two or three jobs to be able to put food on the table for my children. I was lucky enough to get hired in by a union facility, and the steelworkers changed my life. So now I'm dedicated to changing others.
That is awesome. And you were telling me you were working, what was it, a Goodyear facility that's now, what, Continental Tire since they bought them out? Is that right?
That is correct, yes.
Good, 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 good. Well, hopefully all the contracts will carry over and everybody will be safe and secure on their jobs. Well, let's talk about this We Supply America tour that kicked off on Monday. We talked about it on the show, and I understand our labor secretary was on board. Scott Paul, who heads the Alliance for American Manufacturing, was a part of it. But talk to me about the structure of this tour and your involvement in it. Go ahead.
So the bus tour is a week-long event, a week of action that's taking place this week. The bus tour will cover six states during a five-day span: Indiana, Ohio, West Virginia, Virginia, North Carolina, and Pennsylvania. The stops will feature the area employers who are connected to the infrastructure supply chain. We've got members there, elected officials that realize the importance of passing this infrastructure bill. The events focus on the work that we do, the infrastructure we rely on, and how the right kind of investments can benefit all of us.
Tiffany, any reason why you picked the states that you picked? Was there some strategy behind that?
Those are the states that have a lot of the facilities that really supply a lot of the components or parts or services that really have a lot to do with infrastructure. We're working on these joint letters. I'm not sure how familiar you are with the We Supply America campaign, but we're working on joint letters with our employers, highlighting the products that we make, how they impact infrastructure and the infrastructure that we depend on. So when we got these joint letters, we're going to these facilities, highlighting them, you know, just to make sure that Congress knows and the administration knows that what we do and how our work can benefit the communities.
Tiffany, explain to me your role. Did you coordinate this entire bus tour here?
I personally did not. Our rapid response department in Pittsburgh, at headquarters, actually, planned the whole event. I took care of the event that happened in Ohio on Wednesday, getting some folks out there, making sure we had permission to shine our bat light, things like that. So I'm the coordinator over Ohio, and our national coordinator took care of the other states.
I gotcha. Well, I'm looking at the Steelworkers website, and this is all posted at usw.org. And in Ohio, it was in Newark, Ohio, where the bus tour stopped. Now, talk to me about the reaction when that bus came in to Ohio. What did people say? What was the reaction?
Oh, we had a fantastic reaction. Everybody wants to take pictures with it. You can see the picture on our website. The wrap was done by USW members. This started because our international president and one of our international vice presidents came from a steel mill in Indiana. And back in the mid-90s, there was a Stand for Steel campaign where they took a flatbed truck and drove around the entire country using that flatbed as a stage. And they wanted to do something similar to that to bring awareness to this infrastructure bill that's so critically important. Finding a flatbed was a little bit difficult task. So our international vice president, Roxanne Brown, which is absolutely incredible, said, hey, why don't we just use a bus and do a bus tour? So this is how this all came about. We've gotten a lot of positive reactions. It's just a really cool thing.
And it's my understanding it wraps up, what is it, tomorrow in Pittsburgh? Is that right?
It does. It wraps up in Pittsburgh tomorrow. They've been on the road since Sunday, nonstop, sometimes two stops in one day.
That's awesome. Now, it's my understanding that Buy American provisions were included in the Senate bill. And the Senate bill we're talking about is the $1.2 trillion Senate bill that got bipartisan support, which is a good thing, and it's now in the House. I'm just wondering, I don't know if you've been following it. Are they making progress? It's important. The House has been, they have a progressive caucus there. I think they want to make it even better. But from what I understand, things are moving in the right direction. Do you know anything about that right now, Tiffany?
It is. It is definitely going in the right direction. As you mentioned, we got bipartisan support in the Senate. Our Ohio senators, Sherrod Brown and Rob Portman, were both very instrumental in improving and advancing this bill. This bill, like you said, it's over $1 trillion. This bill will be the single largest dedicated bridge investment since the construction of the interstate highway system. It's the largest investment in passenger rail since the creation of Amtrak 50 years ago. It ensures every American has access to reliable high-speed internet with union-made fiber optic cable. $17 billion in port infrastructure, $25 billion in airports to address repair and maintenance backlogs. $55 billion investment represents the largest investment in clean drinking water in American history. You know, and you mentioned the Buy American policy. You know, our allies in Congress fought to make sure every tax dollar spent on infrastructure is spent on American-made products, which is amazing. You know, today we have waivers made 40 years ago that allow the federal government to ignore U.S. suppliers for construction materials and other goods. And this bill will force the government to redo those mistakes.
Well, and I'll tell you, there's been so many mistakes over the years. I talked to your president and your former president, Leo Gerard, about the steel that they use on the bridge in California. Steel that came from China. Why? Because the governor at that time, Arnold Schwarzenegger, went for the lowest bidder. Hey, you know, you get what you pay for, right? And they bring the steel. Yeah, they bring the steel in there. It was rusting and falling apart before the bridge was done. So they had to redo everything. And I keep bringing that story up because many of the people in power, I'm talking about politicians, both sides of the fence here, they don't seem to understand that. And I get it. I get it. They want to do it as cheaply as possible. But you know what? There's quality control. You know, they're spending taxpayers' money. Taxpayers are always concerned about the money that's being spent on projects like this. But there comes a point in time where we have to take care of our own and we have to make sure that the quality of the goods that we're using in our infrastructure are the best quality that's around, and they're made right here in America. So, Tiffany, it's my understanding Buy America is good, but, you know, union protections. Now, what do you know about that right now?
So included in the bill, we're trying to get the PRO Act passed, which is protecting our right to organize, which is fantastic for union protections.
Very good. Very good. Yeah, we've hit that pretty hard on the show here, and it's important that more senators come on board. I believe there's about two or three still on the fence on that, but we'll check on that in the weeks to come. Getting back to the bus tour, you're pretty happy with the way this worked out, especially in the state of Ohio. I know you're District 1, which is state of Ohio, but you said earlier that the reaction has been pretty good. But, I mean, if you had to do it all over again, any changes to what happened this week?
No, I don't think I would change a single thing except for the weather on Wednesday.
Well, that's one thing we cannot change. There's no doubt about that.
It was pouring down rain, but our members stood there. You know, our executive board, our vice president stood there in the pouring rain. And that just speaks to the dedication, you know, of our union for this project, for this investment, for the infrastructure bill.
Boy, good point there. Well, I'm going to wrap it up on that note. The We Supply America bus tour, it started in Chesterton, Indiana on Monday. And what a start. Tom Conway, the president of the steelworkers, was there. We had Marty Walsh, our labor secretary there. Scott Paul of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. It went through Ohio, Weirton, West Virginia, Danville, Virginia, Wilmington, North Carolina, and it wraps up tomorrow in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which is the headquarters for the United Steelworkers. And you could follow this. Just go to usw.org. And I know Scott Paul of the Alliance for American Manufacturing is sending out tweets, too. So it's a good thing. We got to make sure our voices are loud and proud. We want to supply America. If we're going to spend all that money on our infrastructure, make it made in America and make it union made. Tiffany, great job. Thank you so much for joining us, and you keep up the fight, all right?
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, latest from the American Legion and the Alliance for Retired Americans. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.